I am a big Harry Potter fan. I've read the books, I've seen the movies, but there's always been one thing that's really bugged me.
What is that, Mike?
Well, if you're not familiar with Harry Potter, it's basically these 10-year-old kids get shipped off to wizard boarding school. And as soon as they get there, they get hoarded off into these four different fraternities. I think that's a good way of putting it.
Huh.
They
put them at house.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. They for 10-year-olds.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not creepy at all. So basically, they put this magic hat on your head, and it tells you exactly what kind of adult you're going to be. And it turns out that one of these fraternities where all the mean and greedy kids go. And every time somebody grows up to be a serial killer or a murderer or a thief or some kind, hey, guess what their alma mater was?
The 1%?
Yeah, they are the 1%. So these kids all get shipped off, and you know exactly who they're going to be. So I'm thinking, okay, here's an idea. So every single time the hat goes Slytherin, why don't you just put the kid back on the train? Send him back to his mom and dad.
Put him down.
Yeah, seriously, it's like the equivalent of imagine if they put a hat on their head at a 10-year-old and it went, Al-Qaeda. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not teaching that kid how to fly a plane. Yeah. You are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I am Mike Gillis, and joining me in the studio this week, Rich Lyons of Living After Faith fame.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And the president of Seattle Skeptics, Case. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So we're going to kick right off by going into what it seems to be everyone's favorite segment. I mean, there is only one that we have right now. But again, it's a pretty popular one. We like to call Scripture Says What?
What?
Yeah, this is where we look at the funny, the bizarre, and the just plain scary stuff in our holy books. And this one is pretty scary this week. This one actually is one that needs a little bit of context to let you on. This is another one of those stories where God is pissed off at his creation. We've done all these bad things, these horrible things, and he goes, pulls out his favorite trick out of the bag, the one thing he likes to do when people do a bad thing, which is he just murder a bunch of people all at once.
That'll learn you.
I mean, yeah, it worked for him the first time with Noah, and this is the same book of the Bible, so we haven't even gotten to chapter 2, and we're already moving on to a second round of genocide. And I guess he's learning, because this is on a smaller scale. This is just two cities he's wiping out. So, anyone's familiar with Sodom and Gomorrah? Basically, God wants to nuke the town from orbit, so he sends down these two angels to talk to, of course, the one good guy in town and his family, and that's Lot. So this comes from, what is the chapter? Genesis chapter 9, verse, I believe it's 6 through 8, or okay. I'm sorry, 1 through 8. That's the two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. My lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night and go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we will spend the night in the square. But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Before he had gone to bed, all of the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded his house. They called out to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so we can have sex with them. Lot went outside to meet them and shut the door behind him and said, no, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they are under the protection of my roof. By the way, Lot is the good guy in this story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a better idea to offer up your daughters to be raped than mythical men who don't exist.
Yeah, this is one of those examples, I think, of biblical morality. And that I really can't imagine a scenario where you're saying, no, these men are under the protection of my roof. I would have assumed that his daughters would have been as well.
Yeah, that's a strange one for me. I don't understand why his daughters would get less protection than these two strangers who have just entered his house just for the evening.
Yeah,
I don't think I can get that.
I don't either. But don't worry, folks. I guess the daughters get the last laugh. Of course, they get their father drunk and rape him in a later chapter. So, win?
Yeah.
Anyways, we're moving on. We're going to be talking about a little bit about faith healing and exorcism today. I'm somebody that didn't have an upbringing in a religious background. I'm somebody that didn't regularly go to any kind of a church, and certainly not the kind of church that believed in this stuff. So when I hear stories about this sort of thing, it feels a little bit Dungeons and Dragons to me. Rich, when we talk about Faith healing and exorcism, what are we talking about here?
What we're talking about, churches from the Bible preach that God will heal you based on your faith. And that was a great large percentage of Jesus' outreach. He would heal people, and then whenever he healed people, people would come to believe in him. So he would give evidence, and then they would have faith based on the evidence. So that was a large percentage of how his ministry supposedly started. And by the same token, that's a whole lot of what certain churches, I say Pentecostal, Assembly of God,
charismatic,
yes, put a whole lot of emphasis on that. It was a big part of my ministry. I was actually sought out as a faith healer and as a exorcist, having done both, and during those 20 years that I was a pastor. So when I came out of the church, there were some things that I would just simply say, I don't have a place to put this, meaning I really can't emotionally and mentally deal with it. One of the things that helped me is my shrink, and we're going to introduce her in just a moment, is Lynn Criddle. She is an ARNP, practices in Seattle, and has been my psychiatrist, my shrink, for years now. But one of the things she did is in 1987, she published a paper called The Placebo Effect, Some Implications for Healing. And it's by Marilyn Criddle, published again in February 27th, 1987. And in that paper, she does a fabulous job of describing what placebo healing is. So if we can go ahead and bring Lynn on. Greetings, Lynn.
Lynn, can you hear us?
Hello. Hello, I'm here.
So, thank you for joining us. First off, tell us, what is placebo healing?
The placebo effect is not totally known in any respect in terms of what it is, but it exists. And so what we see is that people will actually change physically, and it's not just an imagined thing. They will have real physical change under certain circumstances, and so it's been kind of a mystery in medicine of why this happens, of why certain people. But there are documented cases of people having a profound change that occurs under a variety of circumstances, and so they actually get better. But we don't really understand what it is.
So, Lynn, what kind of circumstances is it that generally evokes the placebo effect?
I think it's, well, again, this is really, people have been trying to study it and trying to understand it, and if we understood more, we actually could evoke it more. But one of the things is that you have a faith in the practitioner or the person who is going to heal you. Often the person has some anxiety and is very frightened about the condition that they've got. It's more likely to occur if there's a chronic illness as opposed to an acute illness. It's more likely to occur if there's hormonal control involved in the illness or a central nervous system involvement in the illness. And right now I have to put a disclaimer in, is because you heard the date of my work on placebo, though I've watched it over the years, but that was a long, long time ago that I wrote the paper 20 years ago. And I have watched the research, there's some more that I am not up to date on, so there might be more known about this, but those are kind of some of the elements that are here at this point that we know.
And I want to just clarify, we're not talking solely a psychological or an imagined benefit, but a real physical benefit.
Absolutely. That's a myth about placebo, is that it is a real physical benefit.
But it's a physical benefit that's triggered by a physical or mental response?
We think it's a mental response, and so yes, we think that it's a mental response, but we don't really understand it.
Lynn, let me get your opinion about something. What do you think the ethics are if you are a practitioner who knows that your particular cure doesn't actually work, that does use the placebo effect, but you have to market it in such a way that you actually bring about that kind of effect in someone? So, what are your thoughts about the ethics about that?
Well, this is a really complicated ethics. I mean, I really don't feel bad about adding what I call the placebo punch. That is, if I feel like this medication that I might be prescribing is likely to work, then I'm going to enthusiastically say it's most likely to work, and I will also have, you know, a little less emphasis on the disclaimers of sometimes it doesn't under these circumstances, et cetera. And so if I add the placebo punch with enthusiasm and so that they can feel like I know what I'm talking about and I have faith in the in the procedure or the thing that I'm doing for them, then I feel like that's ethical.
Yeah, I was going to say that it seems like this is something that's supplementary to actual evidence-based treatment rather than a replacement for treatment itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I was in the hospital for a kidney stone, the first shot of Demerol or whatever they give you did nothing for the pain. I mean, I was writhing in pain. I asked for more medicine. She came out. She said, "We're giving you something different now. This is the most powerful painkiller we have. It's probably going to make you woozy and make you knock you out, but this is going to take absolute care of your pain, and you may not know where you are, but you're not going to be hurting." And she gave me the shot. Now, I have no idea what it was. It did work, but I totally understood while she was saying that she was, as Lynn said, putting the placebo punch on it, right?
Right, right. And then there's some additional factors. The placebo works better in injectable form than oral form.
Wow. I had no idea.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us and for being a part of our show today.
Okay.
That is Lynn Criddle, and those who listen to me on the Living After Faith podcast know her affectionately as my shrink. I talk about her often, and in some cases have even said so much and should have while she was on the air all my life to her, because she literally talked me off the Aurora Bridge once.
So wow.
She is awesome.
So, Rich, you're somebody who actually performed these faith healings, these exorcisms. The people that you've helped, or who believe that they've been helped by this, would you say that this is something that they did as a supplement to actual treatment, or is this something that they did as a replacement for treatment?
In most cases, as a replacement for treatment. Sometimes as a supplement to treatment, but most of the time it was done so they wouldn't have to get treatment, or so they wouldn't have to go through the medical process. An example of that, Deborah. She came to me on a Friday. She had a breast exam, and they found something in the breast exam. And then they did a mammogram and saw something on the mammogram. And then they did the ultrasound, and sure enough, it's there. So on Monday, she's going to go in and have a biopsy done. So they've already found it on manual exam, on the mammogram, on the ultrasound. And during the church service, I worked the service. I mean, I reordered the steps that Lynn put, and the things I kind of abbreviated them. The person is seeking hope and can't find another source of hope, but they desperately want hope. You got to have them desperate as part of the pastoral thing. People who aren't desperate don't get healed, so you don't use them.
And that's generally why a lot of preachers, when they're trying to look for a new follower, they tend to go to places like people who are in treatment for things like an addiction, or they're in prison, or they're away from their family at school.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's better if there's some kind of effort, so you have this build-up in the service where they're having to put an effort into reaching a level of hysteria, but we wouldn't call it that at the time. There's also some kind of physical sensation involved, some kind of touch, some kind of pain, something. That's where, you know, when the preacher pushes somebody over when they're praying for them, it gives a point of this is where it happened.
It feels like it has an impact.
Exactly. And usually there is a relationship of trust and awe with the practitioner. And in this case, Deborah absolutely had that. So in the middle of the service, I called Deborah out. I explained what the situation was and looked her dead in the eye and said, "You're healed." And she fell, hit the ground, never touched her. Didn't have to. The sensation was in the eyes, the contact. The next day, she goes to the hospital, and they look with the ultrasound, trying to find, because they're going to do the biopsy, ultrasound assisted. And what did they find? Nothing. They couldn't find it with the ultrasound. They didn't do a biopsy. So she is one of seven people I healed, and I put quotes there. What do you call those?
Air quotes, right?
Air quotes. I put air quotes there. She was healed of cancer, and that spread out all across everywhere. Well, number one, she was never diagnosed with anything.
That it might have been just a lymph node or something?
It could have been anything. It could have been an abscess, and they heal on their own. It's very interesting because my wife now, Deanna, we went through a very similar process. She did have the biopsy. It came out to be negative, but for the next year, she was under various kinds of treatment for an abscess. So, but it's one of those things that totally can go away on its own, and that's exactly what happened in that situation. But to this day, that person still, whenever she sees me, says, Rich, how can you be an atheist? You healed me.
Yeah.
Still believes. Healed of cancer.
It's sort of amazing, that sort of stuff, that it could have very well been something where she didn't even have the diagnosis of cancer.
There was no diagnosis. There was none.
That there are plenty of people who have these sorts of treatment, never see a faith healer, and this stuff does go into remission on its own.
Absolutely.
If it was ever there at all. And you are listening to Ask an Atheist. We're going to continue talking about this right after the break. You can give us a call. Number is 253-584-1480. We'll see you in a bit.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Freely.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy, just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And we are back. You are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're talking a bit about exorcism and faith healing. Now, Case, you're the president of Seattle Skeptics.
That's right.
But this wasn't always the case. You were a believer at one point.
Oh, yeah. In the early 90s, I was involved with an Assemblies of God church that believed in the five gifts of the Holy Spirit. And so anyway, they had baptisms and prophecy, speaking in tongues, faith healing, exorcisms, the works.
A good potpourri of weird stuff.
So that's fair to say, yeah.
You've witnessed a faith healing?
Oh, yeah, a few of them. Basically, on the Thursday nights, what they do is they'd get everybody into a prayer circle, and they'd have everyone kind of pray over the individual issues. They believed in spiritual warfare, which is this idea that God and Satan are in this large battle for souls every day, and every time you have any seed of a doubt, that's Satan kind of working his spell over you to try to convince you to turn against God. So anyway, in these prayer circles, they would have people, if they had depression, that was a demon causing that. If you had lust or jealousy or any financial issues, odds are that was a demon affecting you, and therefore they could pray that sort of thing out of you.
So essentially, these regular modern day, you know, real meat and potato problems, things that everyone faces every day, it isn't just that problem. This is something on this grand war between good and evil, then.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the gifts is the discernment of spirits. That means that you can actually see demons or things that are affecting you. So someone could say, yeah, I actually see a demon affecting you and trying to cause you to turn from Christ.
So when the faith healing is happening, is this in a similar sense to even the exorcism that Rich has talked about, that the sickness in a weird sort of way is demon-caused as well?
That's right, yeah, yeah. The sickness would be demon-caused, or it's an effect of you turning away from God in some way.
So you witnessed a lot of this stuff. You were a believer at one point, and you're not now. What did that experience like when you look back at this sort of stuff? What do you see now?
Well, whenever I see, I saw a show not long ago where they showed people being slain in the spirit, and they were you know in a ceremony where they're being prayed over and they fall back. I really do look at those people like they're burn victims because I know wow. how hard it is to ever get out of that. Oh. When you got to the point where you're slain in the spirit and you actually believe that Jesus is affecting your life every single day and there's spiritual warfare going on, it's very, very hard to get out. And it's very, very hard for me when I see that.
That is so, wow. Absolutely. I totally feel that because that's the way I feel so much and why we do so much of what we do with Living After Faith. They are like burn victims.
Yes.
Burned and burned and burned. Oh, man. Absolutely
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Those hooks will be in you for years to come.
Yeah.
Even if you ever start to doubt what is around you is real, the journey from that to ever being in a life of critical thinking will take years. It will yeah. take absolutely years.
So Rich, you've made this transition that Case is talking about here. When you look back at exorcisms you've performed, at people who've been faith healed under you, what do you perceive that you were doing now? What do you think was happening now when you look back at something that you thought was supernatural then?
Yeah, there's a big scope of what was happening. So if I get too long in this question, just give me the finger and we'll go somewhere else. But, you know, some of the people who were thought they were demon possessed, and demon possession was the most interesting thing. You had different kinds of demon possession. You had those who had seen the exorcist and those who hadn't. If they've seen the exorcist, they're going to puke at some point. It's just part of the process of, right? I mean,
yeah,
you've
yeah.
seen those.
Very common.
The voice, they talk in that guttural voice, and they, you know, one of the things that I would always do is have the demon tell me his name, because once you knew his name, then you were getting somewhere.
You had power over him.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was always, let's see, my favorite one was Jedi.
Jedi.
Wow. I'm finna cast the devil out of Obi-Wan.
So people would actually come up with names for their demon?
Oh, yeah. And there was Donna. Her demon was Bad Donna.
And Bad Donna.
Bad Donna.
That's the one that has the goatee?
Well, it was just
a transporter accident.
Donna's situation, it was we had these eating services and singing services. I hated the singing services because that's when all the people that were over 90 years old got to get up and sing, and they couldn't carry a tune. They were singing songs. I mean, it was just horrible. So even as the pastor, that's when I was a servant and would be in the back room cleaning up after all the eating service because I couldn't take it. But one day Donna back there comes up and she starts frothing at the mouth and saying I didn't know who she was and that she had a demon and its name was Bad Donna. And in about 15 minutes cast the devil out of her. And she to this day, I mean, I heard from her not long ago, saying, you know, asking me the question, how can you be an atheist knowing that you cast the devil out of me? And you know, at that point, what it really was, a lot of times the people were looking for attention. The people who had a demon were generally looking for attention, and that was a way to get the attention that they were looking for.
So did this name, in a weird sort of way, when I hear this name, Bad Donna, it sort of sounds like what we're really talking about here. It seems like this is the real answer here. Is this just parts of a person, this internal part of yourself that you don't like or you're upset with, but it's something internal, that it's you, and that I think there's kind of a Dumbo's magic feather effect
yeah.
with both exorcism and with faith healing, that there's something in you, something in your own personality that you're angry about, that it's you. It's kind of like, if you're familiar with the Dumbo thing, that's the story about the little elephant with big ears who
yeah.
can fly, and he halfway through the movie, he's conned into thinking that he needs this external source, this magic feather, to be able to fly, and then he learns later that it was him all along.
Right.
It Is bad Donna just means a parts of her personality she doesn't like?
Yeah, exactly. She had a lot of anger from the death of her father. Her father had apparently abused her. I don't know details on that, but I know that there was an extremely horrific relationship between her and her father, and he had died, and she went to his gravesite and set up a picture of him and took target practice with a pistol, killing her father.
Wow.
And, you know, that was the demon in her really killing her father in her view. So it was areas that needed therapy, and she needed a way of releasing that. And I guess through the words I spoke, she was able to release the anger and at least maybe classify it as a part of her that's gone. I don't really understand the psychology of that, but I think that's where that really goes.
Yeah, well, you know, we can't discredit the notion of the fantasy-prone personality as well, where people who just, they you know, they're very susceptible to, gosh, they see a book called Communion, you know, that the alien abduction book. Next thing you know, they attribute anything strange going on there into their lives as this could be something alien or a ghost or whatever.
That you know. Take something internal and you give credit to an external force, whether you're talking about aliens or the evil, you know, smoke-filled room to people who control the world or God or demons or things like that. That's the thing. It really kind of, this kind of begs the question, Rich, is of all these people, do you ever concerned that some of them who wanted to get attention may be trying to con you, or they're just playing with the pastor?
And, you know, there were those that I knew didn't have a demon. I mean,
or at least they didn't really think they had one, you mean?
They thought they did.
Okay.
Or they would come to me, and I thought, you know, that's really not what that is. That's really just someone acting out. But then I would take it the next step of crazy. And I would say, but what would cause someone to want to act out like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Adolescence.
It would have to be a demon.
Even better.
So they may not really have a demon, but a demon's causing them to think they have a demon. You got my logic there,
That's
right?
That's circular. I love it. Yeah.
It's so circular. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it was the same process for the fake demons as it was the real demons. And amazingly enough, it worked the same way.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the part that really kind of gets me, is it seems like when you have a faith-based methodology for understanding the world, how do you determine when somebody's faking you out or not? It's not like you can, you know, pull out the PKE meter and scan them for, you know, possession.
Yeah, it's just like I said, you know. And Case mentioned the discerning of spirits. That was another one of the, I had just about all the gifts, I think, except raising the dead or something. But that was another one of the things that I could just, and how did all that work? I had no clue. I mean, it was just whatever you think.
That's one of the challenges of that sort of faith. It's like, how do you actually determine what's real? Like, if someone comes to your church, and I saw a billboard advertisement for a guy who called himself an apostle.
Mm-hmm.
How, if someone comes to your church and says they're an apostle, how do you know? How can you actually tell if they're, because prayer won't work?
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand.
There's tons of that. That's a whole, wow.
Because that's, I mean, if
self-proclamation of religious credentials is a whole other subject.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you point out a fake prophet or a fake apostle or a fake demon?
I can point out a fake prophet right now. Harold Camping.
Yeah, he's retired now. I think it's just a long question, and I'm so sick of talking about this guy.
But
I'm just
saying, that's the only method I would that actually works.
Yeah, it's a false prophecy. That's the litmus test.
At this point, all I want to say is that he should spend the rest of his life giving his money away to the people who ruined themselves in the name of his prophecies. Then he should spend his everything else just giving a long series of heartfelt apologies, then crawl under the porch and die. Moving on. So that's the big thing is, in case you're talking about this path between being somebody who really believed this and Rich being somebody who really performed this stuff, what is the path away from that? When everything is demons and even your own doubts, what is the breaking point there?
The breaking point, I could get away from the demons of doubts once I got away from believing in God altogether. When I was allowed to question, let myself question the character of God and found his character lacking. Who on earth would, or who in the world in the universe would create this entire universe, and part of his plan includes torturing people forever? You know, there was no way I could justify the way the system was set up. a loving God couldn't have created it that way, thus a loving God couldn't exist. And I've learned more since then. But once I got to that point, then once the supernatural doesn't exist, then there's no demons of doubt. But I wrestle with that continuously until I reach that place.
For me, it was the lack of internal consistency. I mean, if a pastor claims that they can interpret tongues, not only speak tongues, but also interpret them, you know, right. as you know, part of the five gifts, then they should be able to do it accurately. And I'd actually gotten in the habit, and I may have shared the story before, of recording people who spoke in tongues and then recording the translation. And when I found that it did, his own translations didn't match up with what he said he had said earlier, then for me, the internal consistency was not there. And so I started to doubt that pastor, and then it grew from there. But taking those first steps into doubt are really, really tough, given the context of the whole thing is spiritual warfare, and therefore you've got to keep doubt at bay.
This is something I've actually heard from a lot of atheists who used to be very, very religious, is that first pillar, the first thing that is holding as the foundation of this entire belief system, that one is really well protected, because they set you up with this system that makes you afraid of even looking at it and questioning it. But once that first one breaks, it sounds like it's a pretty quick collapse for the rest of it. Has that been your guys' experience?
Just like Building 7. But yeah. Yes, yes, that was my experience. Was once that first pillar of doubt occurred, it transferred to other things. I find myself questioning other things. Like they said, they healed somebody of AIDS. Well, can I meet this guy? And when that was, well, why do you want to? Where's your heart when you ask these questions?
Yeah.
I thought that was a funny way of pushing the question back at me, when it should be just self-evident that they'd want to hold this man up as a miracle that the church had performed.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, if it's true,
it's true.
This could only cement your faith.
Yes, if you've got a royal flush, you show that off.
Yeah.
You don't muck the cards.
And,
you know?
And Rich, this is something you said earlier, that Jesus is going around healing people, and that his healing is creating the evidence for the belief. And it sounds
right.
kind of like this has been turned on its head, that you have to believe or the healing doesn't work.
Exactly. And there are even places in the scriptures where it gives the preacher the perfect out. One place Jesus went and was not able to heal a multitude because they didn't believe. And there are a couple, in one place he says, he can't heal because of your unbelief. And as your faith is, so be it unto you. So because of that, it gives the preacher the out. If someone's not healed, there were several people that I prayed for that there seemed to be miraculous healings. There were also several people I prayed for that died plain dead. One died while I was praying for her.
Wow.
Hand on the head in the ICU. And it's funny, a year earlier, same situation, I went, prayed for, she was healed in the ICU. Year later, she's back in, put herself in another diabetic coma. Go in and pray for her. And while I'm praying, I'm interrupted by this loud squealing beep and nurses coming in, removing me from the place.
I guess we should be happy that she's in a hospital, though. I mean, she's yeah, supplementing this
prayer.
It
was supplemental, yeah. But how do you blame the faith of the person in the coma?
Yeah.
Is what I, you know, but of course it's, you know, so that's when you push it off and say it wasn't God's will. Last year it wasn't her time, but this time it was her time. It's just...
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's so easy to work around it. My biggest issue, though, in coming out and going back to that, was where would I put people like this? Where would I classify, you know, if I don't believe in supernatural, but I know these things happen. So I had to go back through them and examine them and figure out what happened. And what my determination was, there were a few instances where probably real-life placebo healing took place. There were a lot of instances where people thought something took place.
So it's sort of a reverse hypochondria?
Kind of like for instance, one person had at one time been diagnosed with precancerous cells in her uterus. Okay, we prayed for her, but she also had treatment, had a freeze treatment. I'm not sure what that really is. But she was okay. But a few years later, she started having the same symptoms, losing weight, lethargic, all of these things. What I leave out of the story when I would tell it before is she was also quite depressed. And she came up for prayer, and in praying for her, I told her that the cancer she had returned, but that God was healing her from it right now. And again, she crumbled up in a little ball, and then got up, and she gained her weight back that she lost, her joy for life. What really happened then is she was depressed. And then the thought that God Almighty heard her, saw her, touched her, served as a catalyst to turn her depression around. So what really happened there? She never had cancer. You know, she was healed of something she never really had. But what happened in reality is it just gave a springboard for her depression to turn around. Every one of the situations I can point to, I can tell you something of that nature where something like that happened. I have done one faith healing since I've become an atheist, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah, really what this reminds me of is a story I heard on NPR a few years ago about this guy who was in a small African village who was really, really depressed, and they offered to put this a ceremony for him where he'd have to bring this requisite amount of livestock, and then they would sacrifice the animals, put blood on him, they'd burn all his old clothes, and the entire village would come out to cast all of these bad spirits away from him. And the thing that he really found is once they started doing this, because he had to do a lot of homework, he had to shop around to some other villages to find the right amount of goats, the right amount of chickens,
wow,
is that he actually felt better after the fact. And he's not somebody who really believes in this spiritual religion that they had. And he basically said, of course I'd feel better. The entire town came out to make me feel better about myself. That everyone stopped what they were doing and said, we care about you being sad and we want to do something about it. And then, like you said, it gives you that jump that makes you feel better about something like that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to continue this conversation about faith healing, exorcism, and the placebo effect. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll see you in 2 minutes.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanistsofwashington.org.
If you long to escape the religious bias on your television, if you love scientific shows, if you think that funny and thought-provoking are not mutually exclusive, then we'd like to welcome you to a network made with you in mind. Secular Video Network is an online source for free thinking programs. We feature a range of videos from Mr. Deedy, The Thinking Atheist, and Richard Dawkins. While watching, you can participate in our live chat for engaging discussions. There is no cost, there is no proselytizing, just nonstop thought-provoking shows. So visit us at secularvideonetwork.com.
Join us after today's show at the Office Bar and Grill in downtown Tacoma. Offering a wide selection of tap and bottled beer, a full bar of your favorite liquor, and a taste bud tantalizing menu, come on down and shoot the breeze with the Ask an Atheist crew. Who can argue with your motives? After all, you're at the office. The Office Bar and Grill is at 813 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
And we are back. You are listening to Ask an Atheist. You want to say something about faith healing, exorcism, and the placebo effect? Give us a call. Our number is 253-584-1480.
And if you have a demon, I'll cast it out live on the radio.
You can't beat radio like that. You're not.
We can do it.
You gonna get that on NPR? I don't think so.
Hey, do you know how much this demon of lust cost me? I'm not gonna have you cast it out.
I
need this.
So, yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier about using these placebo forms of healing, whether we're talking about faith healing, exorcism. We could probably toss out homeopathy or any one of these herbal...
Naturopathy, sure.
Naturopathy, any of these
things. I've got a list of those. Acupuncture, aromatherapy, chiropractic, energy healing, EMDR, faith healing, faith touch, healing touch, homeopathy, magnetic therapy, prayer, psychic energy, and reflexology.
So, basically a good potpourri of crazy crap with no evidentiary support. So, but not everyone uses these things as a supplement. I mean, yeah, it's one thing if you're going to have prayer healing, you know, I'm not going to try to stop you. But there are some people that use this as the exclusive way of trying to hear things as bad as cancer in some places.
And there's that church in Oregon. Oregon recently passed a law to require that parents get children medical help rather than just praying. That's Followers of Christ Church, and they're everywhere, but Oregon recently has addressed this. And several times now, we have had parents convicted of letting their children die or letting their children get sick to the point that they needed emergency surgery and would be marred for life by what happened. And had it had early medical care, would have been nothing, would have been easy to deal with.
The thing with medical problems is that untreated, they do tend to compound very quickly. And I saw the Followers of Christ in Oregon, that's the group we're talking about, their kid had this cyst or something behind their eye that was like the size of a softball, and it breaks your heart.
Yeah, the pictures are horrific.
I mean, it's horrible to look at this poor kid that is suffering so needlessly because these people don't believe in medical science. It's like, you know, sure, do your little faith healing thing, your little rain dance or whatever, whatever kind of BS that you do. But, you know, back it up with a doctor. I mean, even if you don't end up giving the doctor who really did the work credit later, I mean, at least go see the doctor. And it's like you were talking about people who went to you for ailments that they hadn't even been diagnosed for, Rich.
Right, exactly. And one of the things, I in the church I was in, there was a lot of leeway from pastor to pastor of how things were done. Most pastors would say, if you went to a doctor, that's expressing a lack of faith in God. And I turned that the other way around. The way I said it is, take your medication just like you take your food, with prayer and thanksgiving. So, you know, we thank God for the food that we have, and we eat food. You know, we don't just pray instead of eating food. So I said the same thing about medical care. You know, take your pills, take your medication, do it with prayer and thanksgiving, giving thanks to God for these things, not to the doctor. So that reeks of cop-out, but was probably one of the smarter things I did.
Very nice. For me, actually, I had actually done EMDR. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this, but this is a form of therapy. Whereas they take an LED light bar and they put it near your head, and it kind of goes out of your peripheral vision, and they try to make you think of positive things while you're trying to follow the light. It never worked, and the therapist who had actually done it was very, very apologetic about the whole thing. Just even as she was presenting the treatment to me, like, "Well, let's just see how this works, and let me know what you think." And she was almost, "I'm very sorry," like almost like she was pressed to do it. It was kind of funny, but we actually continued on normal therapy because it just didn't work.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
So the thing that I often wonder is, there's no doubt that some of these people, kind of like with psychics, like in the psychic world, Sylvia Brown, people like James Von Prague, John Edward, these guys are clearly frauds, but I don't think everyone in that line of work necessarily is. Not necessarily that they really have powers, but that they believe they do. What do you think the percentage, you guys, of faith healers who really believe this stuff? Because, I mean, you look at this stuff with the Followers of Christ in Oregon, these guys clearly, you know,
you have to believe.
They had to believe. There's no way you'd go that far. You wouldn't sacrifice your kid for a con. Even a horrible person, I have a hard time believing that. But what percentage of you guys do you think they're for real versus outright fraud?
That's a really difficult question to answer, because, you know what, even they get a lot of positive feedback. Even they, just like you said, Rich, you get a lot of people coming to you saying, "I really was healed because of your efforts." So that's a really, I hear that a lot. Like, how many, you know, do you think X is a fraud? I don't know. And I don't even know how we can quantify it.
I'd say the bigger you are, the more, you know, once you get into that making 1,000 times what your congregation does, you're probably getting close to being guaranteed to be a fraud. When people start planting microphones in different places in the congregation and having people, you know, that is absolutely, you know, that you're a fraud. By far and large, I would say there's probably, you'd be hard pressed to find a guy who's out, you know, working in a church, and it is hard work. Pastoring is some of the hardest work I've ever done in my life. When you find a guy who is out there busting it every day of the week, busting it extra hard on Sunday, he's not a fraud. He's a believer. He may be wrong about what he's saying. He may be, but he's honestly so. And, you know, Case got into the question with Lynn, and we might want to revisit that. At what point is it unethical? You know, he's providing some measure of comfort and help to someone albeit, you know, but then you go to something like Reiki or, you know, Healing Touch or something like that, where there's no actual healing, medicine, drug, therapy, anything applied. It's all
psychosomatic.
Yeah.
Does it? What about an outright lie? I mean, a lie is different than just being incorrect, where you know the thing that you're saying is not true and you say it anyways and you're profiting from it, that you're selling a product that, yes, may have a positive response through the placebo process.
Yeah.
Like something like, say, head-on, you know, somebody who really thinks the thing's getting rid of their headaches. But when somebody knows that the product they're selling doesn't work, I mean, Rich, you really believed you were healing people.
Yes.
But what about the people who don't think that they're healing people, that know that they're selling a lemon here, and people believe them? Is that the line that makes it unethical?
That would have to be unethical. If you know what you're doing is a lie, that is unethical. I mean, I can't see, you know, even if there is some perceived benefit or actually received benefit, if you know what you're saying is wrong, if you know you're lying to people, it's just wrong. You just ought not do that.
I met someone who practiced homeopathy, and they knew outright that what they were doing was the placebo effect. They actually knew that their chances of making someone feel better was as good as the placebo effect. And they felt that that was legitimate, that they were able to bring about the cause of their healing through the placebo effect because they believed so much in homeopathy, or their patients did. And they actually felt that that was moral and ethical. And I completely disagree with that.
You know, I agree, and I dealt with that. I had to do an experiment myself to find out. I realized the steps, the process involved in doing a healing. And I was an atheist, already accepted that and knew that I was an atheist. And I'm walking along the waterfront down in Seattle, and there's this obviously homeless person there. His sign says, "I don't need money, I need a miracle." And I'm walking by, and I think, which is more unethical? To just keep walking, knowing that I could give him the miracle he wants? Or is it more unethical to give him a miracle, knowing that it's BS? And I didn't know the answer, so I said, let me try. So I took my glasses off, which you guys don't know, but I have really gorgeous green eyes. They can just pierce through you.
Sparkling.
They can just pierce through you. That's why my wife married me. But anyway, I took off my glasses, stuck them in my pocket, and walked back to the guy. I'm putting my glasses back on. And said, look at me. And he looks up. I said, who do you see? He said, I see the Son of God. I said, you've spoken well. You asked for a miracle. I give you a miracle. Stand up. He stood up, and he just started screaming about how he'd received his miracle and jumping all around, and he was whole again, and it was right again. And I just kind of faded out. It's kind of interesting because, you know, in the Bible days, whenever something would like that would happen, these people would all, you know, gather around to see what happened. Buddy, you do that on the waterfront in Seattle, and people are like, oh, crazy man to the left. Everyone go right. I mean, they were just scattering. But I proved to myself I did have what it takes to do that. I proved to myself it also was BS, and I asked myself the question, is it right to lie?
Yeah, it seems like even if...
I never did it again.
I can imagine, because it seems like even if you do help somebody in that moment and they feel better for a while, there's going to be a crash.
Yeah. What's his life like today? Who knows?
Yeah.
We do have a phone call. We're going to go to line one. Nick from Tacoma wants to talk about Peter Popoff, everyone's favorite fraud. Nick, you're on the air. What have you got for us today?
Well, I was listening to this, and I couldn't help but think of Peter Popoff and his miracle spring water that he would sell over his televangelism thing, and like how much money people had put into this. Like people who lost their entire life savings because of this miracle spring water, and you know he also did all those like faith healing things on like from the pulpit, and like even to the point of like having his wife go out into the crowd, or I guess like in the narthex when people were coming into the church service asking like, oh, what you know, what problems do you have, and like, you know, it just reeks to, you know, I hate to use this term, but high heaven.
Yeah, I remember that, Nick. That was I remember James Randi actually exposed him, that he was being fed information through an earpiece.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You know, I would also say anyone who's charging money for your spring water or something like that, I was regionally accepted as a healer, and I would anoint cloths. I would actually buy a bed sheet, and we'd cut it into little squares about the size of a folded handkerchief, and I would anoint them with oil and pray over, and we sent out thousands of those, but we never charged a dime and have no idea where we sent them. You can do that cheap, and there's no reason to be charging, and he's right. When you're making that kind of money off something like that, that's sign number one that you're a con.
Say, Nick, I'm not as familiar with his spring water. I know about his theatric, you know, healings and stuff like that. How much is he charging for that, if you remember?
I don't remember exactly what he was charging, but there are people who spent their entire life savings forsaking doctors and just going into this miracle spring water.
That's shameful.
Yeah.
And he's probably out back with a hose, you know, filling the bottles with those things. That's sad.
You know, after he was exposed with all this stuff, there were some news outlets who were trying to get an interview with him, and, you know, he was like trying to run away from them while stepping into his $120,000 Porsche, you know? Yeah.
Anyways, thank you for calling, Nick.
Thank you.
One thing about the Peter Popoff thing is that even after he was exposed, he just laid low for a little while and then reemerged someplace else and was able to start the same scam over and over. And that actually is what happens with many of these televangelists, is that they just perpetrate the same scam after laying low for a little while.
Yeah, it's a bit like Pac-Man, that, you know, you gobble up the ghost and then his little eyeballs run to that box in the middle of the screen and he gets a new body after a while.
Yeah,
that's shameful. I know that this again gets back to that point we're making, that the people who are profiting, and not just profiting a little bit, but getting into these really expensive cars that Nick's mentioned, and living in these mansions, that's again what you were saying, Rich, about the bigger you are, the bigger the fraud possibility is.
Absolutely. I wasn't making a lot of money, and I really believed. Once I stopped believing, I stopped doing, and that was a very difficult thing, and people who've listened to the episodes of our podcast understand the process there was very painful, but it's necessary. If you're going to live an honest life, and what you're doing is not honest, you have to change that. And I reached the place that I realized these people that were healed, even if there's perceived benefit, we talked about this, even if there's perceived benefit in what's going on, it's very, very small. The actual people who would have been healed through anything I did, maybe one or two situations actually would be, if you did the clinical analysis, genuine placebo healing. Other than that, it was psychological, or they just accepted the fact that they felt better. And that brings me to a place that, you know, what is the harm? What's the harm in this? Well, what about Steve Jobs? You know, it's become pretty common knowledge that the first year after he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, he tried natural healing.
Naturopathy, yeah.
Yeah, things that just essentially are placebo. And because of that, he lost the opportunity to have the surgery when it could have been effective. And because of that, he died at a young age. Instead of being able to take care of a form of cancer that in its early stage when he caught it, could have actually been cured through the surgery.
And Steve Jobs is not an unintelligent man.
No, he's not an idiot,
and he's clearly somebody that's not going to have a lack of health care because he can't afford it.
No, and he's not this guy that we think of. You know, you think of a religious fanatic being someone who's uneducated, someone who doesn't. No, this guy was probably one of the most intelligent people of our time. Totally had, you know, anything, any resource at his fingertips that he wants. But even someone that smart, that intelligent, that with that many resources, still could wind up turning to something that was lethal.
Yeah, this is something that atheists get accused of, and sometimes I think we're actually guilty of it, is that we equate religious belief in a supernatural, belief in something that's not evidentiary, as a stupid person, or somebody who's really unintelligent. But I don't necessarily think that's the case, and I think that we have these discussions about Christian apologetics. Apologetics are how smart people find a way to trick themselves into continuing to believe when the regular reasons don't work anymore.
Right.
That, generally speaking, a really smart religious person has a really, really elaborate, vague, kind of intangible set of reasons for why they believe, and they get more and more complicated and mysterious as reality doesn't play along with what they want it to be, where a dumb person has dumb reasons. They're like, Jesus said so, I believe it, that's the end of the story. And I think this really goes to show that it's not about intelligence at all, that really, really smart people come up with much smarter reasons for lying to themselves in these sorts of situations, where Casey, you know something about that?
Well, no, actually, I want to bring up something else. There are two things before the show ends that I want to mention. That is, first of all, it's not too late to like Rich Lyon's gorgeous green eyes, the Son of Man eyes, on Facebook if you want your own, very own miracle. And if Lynn Criddle prescribes something to you that tastes like Necco wafers, it's the most incredible medicine you've ever had, no matter what you've heard today.
That's right.
So, yeah, we want to have two quick shout-outs, friends of the show. First, we want to say a big congratulations to our friends Matt Dillahunty and Beth Presswood. Yay! Down in Texas. They're our friends over at the Atheist Community of Austin. They are getting married today. I say best of luck, enjoy your life together, and get back to yelling at super natural believers and weirdos on the internet. And also, we want to send our well wishes to Dr. Friedman. That's Becky's dad and Sam's future father-in-law, who's being shipped off to Iraq to be a staff surgeon.
And we can't say where he is.
Yeah, we can't give that information away. We just want to say, stay safe, Dr. Friedman.
Good luck out
and,
there.
And welcome back when
be
you come back.
Be careful out there.
So, again, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. My name is Mike Gillis. Joining me this week, Rich Lyons of Living After Faith, and Case, the president of Seattle Skeptics.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Our music is by Chris Coleman. Call screener today was Deanna Joy Lyons. Production assistance by Rebecca Friedman, Darren Garfman. And our cheerleaders in the studio, Christy Ressler and Sam Mulvey. We're going to be at the office later today. You can feel free to join us at 5. We'll catch us online at askanatheist.tv. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma on 1180 AM.